Hey, you are now listening to the Graceway Podcast. Let's talk.
Hey, Graceway fam. So glad to have you join us again. I am here with Pastor Rich Perez, who just preached at Graceway. Phenomenal sermon. If you haven't listened to it, visit graceway.org. Check it out. We're going to talk a little bit more about it. So, bro, appreciate you being here.
Man, it's been an honor being here this weekend.
Yeah, we... have some mutual friends.
We do.
And just have enjoyed what you brought, enjoyed kind of your temperament around the whole thing. And
thank you.
Yeah, so just talk to us a little bit about kind of your story, you know, however deep and wide you want to go.
Sure.
And then maybe kind of let us know, you know, what you were doing in NYC and now you're in the ATL. What's happening around?
Yeah, so, you know, the short of it is my parents are from the Dominican Republic, immigrated here in the late 80s, or excuse me, the early 80s. I came in 84. And I think I'm the product of a lot of different things, man. Like New York City, inner city culture,
right.
Immigrant culture, Hispanic culture, hip-hop culture,
right.
Basketball culture. I feel like I'm the mixture of all of those things.
Yeah.
I didn't come to faith until much later in my teenage years. But when I came to faith, I thought it was super authentic, super real. The Lord really did something special.
And how? Real quick.
Yeah. So, you know, we grew up nominally Catholic.
Okay, right on.
My mom came to faith in Jesus at a Protestant church when I was about 13, 11, 13.
Okay.
And at 15, I sat in a sermon, and honestly, man, it was nothing special. I mean, the pastor, I went to a Spanish-speaking immigrant church,
right.
And the pastor was just being very Hispanic, very loud and very direct. And he didn't say anything special other than Romans 8, where he says, man, you could be forgiven, that there's no condemnation. And that just sat heavy with me.
Mm.
And to be honest, I felt like I had heard that sermon before. It was probably a repeat sermon.
Yeah.
And the Lord just gave it to me in a fresh way, and I just came to faith. I said, God, I need to know that there is no condemnation for the things that I've done.
Right.
And I just came to faith. And
15. Okay. I was 16, so.
16? Yeah. Okay, so yeah, you know that world. You're in high school, you're trying to figure your life out. I was playing sports. At that time, there were no Steph Currys that made faith and sports cool.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I wrestled.
Are you comparing yourself to Steph Curry right now?
I am. I think I am.
You think you got that? All right. You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. Go YouTube me. No, but I wrestled at first with my faith going into the jock world, so to speak.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to bring that stuff out. I didn't know how to apply it. But the Lord was kind and went into college playing sports. And I think I really flourished in my faith in college, ironically. I feel like that's the place where you struggle the most.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, you know, fast forward, got married in 2007, and I loved my neighborhood. I love it still. Washington Heights, New York City has a special place in my heart. If you don't know where that's at, they just made a movie about it, a Hollywood movie in the
Hamilton
Heights.
The Hamilton guy,
Lin-Manuel.
Yeah.
But I love home. I love it. In 2017, I had the privilege of writing a book about it, published it, and it was,
Mikasa Uptown,
that's
right.
And so
at all the Amazon.com.
Amazon.com, Barnes and Nobles, you'll find it. Text me, I'll send you a copy. Signed.
Signed.
But I love my neighborhood. And to be honest, you know, part of the reason why my wife in 2011 started a church was not because we had the goal to start a church, but because I wanted there to be a church that the 17-year-old version of myself could go. And I love the church that I grew up in, but they were not focusing on that intersectional demographic
right.
that I was raised by. And so out of that love for my neighborhood came the church, to be honest. And so we started that in 2012 in my 600-square-foot apartment. And 600-square-foot, we didn't think much of it. That was just what we did, you know? Me, my wife, and my two kids, and we were there. But that just ballooned from one small group to three in a matter of 3 months. And Easter of 2012, we had our very first service. And, you know, 10 years later, we were really flourishing as a community. And that's what we did up until we moved to Atlanta this past December.
Okay. And what are you doing in Atlanta?
So in Atlanta, this is what I tell people. I have just been focusing on being at home.
Okay.
Being with my family,
okay.
loving my wife, loving my kids, serving them. But practically and vocationally, I tell my pastor friends all the time, hey, if you need a pinch hitter, just let me know. I'll step in, give you some rest, let you spend some time with your family. Right. Doing some traveling, coming to places like Graceway to speak. It's something that I love doing. And if I could give a pastor some rest, I'd love to do that. That's a ministry unto itself.
Absolutely.
But I've also been exploring my love and my passion for filmmaking. I think story is really important. We know this as pastors. We get up there and we communicate.
Yeah.
The stories we tell are really important for transformation. And I think that, you know, prior to starting the church, I thought I would be behind the camera. Yeah. I studied it in college. And so now I'm in a season where I get to explore some of that. And I'm really excited to do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
So you're in a season. You talked today about feeling safe and satisfied. You came out of Psalm 23.
That's right.
And you talked about predominantly verse 2, that God lets us, makes us, compels us, invites us to lay down.
Yeah.
You talked about kind of the individualism, that self-made drive that we have in the West. Like, I did this.
Mm.
How are you going to tell me to lie down? And you unpack this thing about God giving us an invitation versus permission or even a mandate, right, to lie down. I thought that was, it's a really good contextualization for the States in particular. But you're in this space where you've kind of taken God up on the
invitation.
Yeah, but unpack that a little bit more, just permission versus invitation.
Well, again, I think I go back to story in some ways. I think the way we language things as communicators is really important. And are there mandates in scriptures that God gives us? Absolutely.
Of course, sure.
Things that he mandates of his children. I think the reason why invitation felt more inviting is because we want to know that God wants us in a space rather than forces us to be in a space. I think there's something much more compelling and inspiring about that, that inspires decision.
Yeah.
You know, I tell this to my kids all the time, you know, I want to create a space that inspires them to choose obedience, not just mandated of them.
Yeah.
Because I want the intimacy that we share in that space to be true and authentic.
Mm.
That's going to be a little sloppy. It's going to be a little messy. But I think permission, God granting us the permission to do something, it rubs the wrong way because we're very independent, very self-made kind of culture. And, you know, coming from the family that I came from, the Caribbean, Dominican Republic, I come from a part of the world where the philosophy is community, not individualism.
Yeah.
And, you know, being in the States, you know this, we're very individualistic minded. That could serve us in some ways, but in other ways, and when it comes to our faith, it could be a real obstacle because, you know, things like Philippians 3 and 4 could be a real challenge to say, well, but, you know, those are my interests. Yeah. These are my freedoms. And I'm like, well, you know, God reminds us that our freedoms have a destination, and the destination of our freedom is love.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think that the upbringing I had helped me to appreciate the value of community, and what happens to me happens to those that are around me, whether it's a win or a loss, whether it's a victory or a grief, a burden or something that I carry that I'm excited for. All of that affects the community in one way or another, whether we like it or not, whether we have an individualistic mindset or not. And so I think God wants, there's something, if I could put it this way, something Eastern about our faith.
Yeah.
That says, yo, this is a community.
Right.
God desires to build a people. This is why he says, pray this way, our Father.
Not your
Father.
Yeah.
And so invitation just, it opens us up to that a bit more rather than saying, well, God gave you the permission to lay down. It's like, no, God invites you to something because it says something about God and what he desires.
Yeah.
And so I think the psalm was moving in that direction for me.
So let me dive a little bit more into that because you're in this space where you know, we just said you took God up on the invitation. You know, I said, what are you doing? You said, I'm trying to spend time with my family.
Yeah.
Right? Slow down, feel deeper, create, all of those kind of things. So if you think that God isn't telling us to lie down, but he's inviting us to lie down, a lot of us still struggle with that. Call whatever you want, man. I have a hard time lying down. So 100%. Unpack for me, what do you think keeps people from taking him up on the invitation or obeying, however you want to say it? Lying down.
To put it simply, I just don't think we believe that we're worth more than what we produce.
Yeah, sure.
I just think we have a hard time believing that to be true,
yeah.
especially as Westerners,
yeah, yeah.
especially as people who reap the benefits of their work.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
It's really hard to believe that you could be worth more than what your hands make.
Yeah.
And you know, coming from New York, I said this in the sermon, you know, we're known as the city that never sleeps. And for a long time, I took pride in that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And then as I started to grow in my relationship with God, as I started to be confronted with my limits
yeah.
and my needs, I realized, guys, I don't know if we should be proud about being right. the city right. that never sleeps yeah. because what it really means is that we're the city that's never satisfied.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
always working. We're right. always moving. You know, New York City gets the bad rap of that. But really, I feel like that's somewhat of an American
okay.
thing.
I agree.
And so I think that... the biggest challenge is believing that you're worth more than what you produce. And God is saying, I need you to know that you're worth far mm. more than what you can create. In fact, whatever you create, I don't need. I desire, yeah. but I don't need.
Yeah, right, right.
And I think once we can realize that we're worth more, then laying down, resting wouldn't be as terrifying.
And why do you think people don't realize their value?
Yeah. I don't think that most of us are in environments that encourage
that
affirm that.
Yeah.
You know, you know this as a leader, like you become what you celebrate.
Yeah, sure.
You become what you celebrate. You know, when you walk around, you see your leaders and
yeah.
and they're not being celebrated by you, then
right.
their work will show it.
Yeah, right.
You know that, right? And yeah. so I think that we're not in environments that affirm that we are worth more, you know, mm. by the sneers or the snickers that we make, like by, oh, okay, so you didn't finish this work, or hey, why don't you have a job, or hey, why are you taking a day off, or mm. hey, you know, no days off is
yeah,
what people
yeah.
say.
Right,
it's
right.
like, okay,
sleep
well,
when you're dead, yeah.
yeah, sleep when you're dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Those kind of phrases are like, okay, geez, if I want to be celebrated, then I better make sure I'm working hard.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously there's a lot of nuance there. We should be working. God's called us to good work. But I think ultimately, we need to realize that the destination of this spiritual journey is what Hebrews 4 calls the ultimate rest.
Yeah, right, right.
We're gonna be really surprised
yeah.
when we get to the paradise and
yeah.
realize that what we're gonna do all day is essentially nothing.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah.
in some ways it's
right.
nothing. It's just to praise God. And we're like, wait, where's the work? That's
yeah,
how I
yeah,
defined
yeah.
myself all throughout my life and on earth. But it's like, you didn't create moments to Sabbath. You didn't create moments. Sabbath isn't about inactivity. It's about reminder.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you're worth more than your work, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Take a chill.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's good.
I feel like our environments don't affirm that.
Yeah, that's good. So you talked about, you know, in the Lord's Prayer, give us this day,
yep.
daily bread. And you talked about this idea of our dissatisfaction with that portion, right?
Mm.
That we need God to give us, you know, weekly, monthly Costco portion.
Yeah.
And you told this story about this guy that came to your
mm-hmm.
to your church, and you made, I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but you made this statement that God doesn't provide, he does provide, but his real intent is for us to enjoy his company.
He feeds you with bread, he satisfies you with his company.
Yeah, yeah. And, so unpack that a little bit more for us. I've went to school and all those kind of things. I've never heard anybody work that angle on that. He satisfies you with his company. So you got me chewing on that. So
yeah.
Help me think further through that.
Well, you know, the truth is, I think I'm still chewing on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Experientially, I'm
of
still
course,
chewing
of
on
course.
It because, especially growing up Catholic,
mm.
I prayed that all the time.
Yeah, right.
You prayed it all the time. But you know what? I don't think it had any bearing on my life when
yeah.
I prayed it.
Yeah.
Even as a Christian, as a Protestant, I didn't really think that daily bread was anything crazy. But,
right.
but I started to realize how unsettling that is.
Yeah.
If I just gave it a
yeah.
little bit of thought and be
yeah.
like,
yeah.
daily bread, well, wait, what about tomorrow?
Yeah, right.
What about the week after?
Yeah.
What about the month? That's a little unsettling. And so I think the biggest challenge that you and I, and perhaps all of us as Westerners face, is we don't think in days.
Right. Right.
We think ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
We think ahead because that feels safe. That feels secure. And I made this brief statement in the second service that I didn't in the first, but it was like abundance Being in the land of abundance is a little confusing.
That's, yeah, brilliant.
It's confusing because when you live in abundance, lack is not only surprising, but you get used to having your stomach full.
Yeah, you do.
And you get used to having your cupboard full.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait a second, I got all I need.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, wait, no, you thought that having all of this gave you what you needed?
Right, right.
You missed it.
Yeah.
And so I think the biggest challenge is that we, again, I think as Westerners, we work toward having all the things that make us feel safe. In fact, to go to Costco, and again, there's a lot of nuance here, so I want to make sure for anyone watching, there's a lot more to unpack here.
Course.
I don't think you should stop meal prepping. I think meal prepping is good. It's wise. Like, yeah, I'm not telling you not to meal prep, but I think to go to Costco in some way is to say, is to organize your life in such a way so that you never hunger.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think hunger is good.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it creates something. That's why we fast as Christians.
Right,
we create seasons of fasting. But I think that that's our biggest threat.
Yeah.
It confuses us to believe that we have all that we need. But God says, I'll give you today's portion. Let's just sit and eat.
Yeah.
Let's just sit and eat it together.
Yeah.
I'll feed you with bread, but you're going to leave here satisfied because of the company you shared with me.
Yeah.
And you know what, brother? I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll do this really again tomorrow.
Yeah, and the Costco is not the point. You're just kind of picking up a cultural artifact.
Sure.
Right, and saying,
sure,
what is this?
Yeah, go make your Costco runs, man. Meal prep. It's all good.
Do your thing.
But, you know, just bear in mind, it's the same thing with wealth.
Yeah, for sure.
It's the same thing with wealth. Ain't nobody saying you can't have a few properties.
Yeah,
ain't nobody saying you can't have wealth.
Yeah.
But don't be confused that the storehouses you have leave you satisfied.
That's right. Yeah.
Use it.
Yeah.
Use it for the kingdom.
Yeah.
Meal prep, brother.
Yeah.
Do your thing.
Yeah, and if you have those things, be thoughtful about why you wanted them and their effect on you.
Why you wanted them.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about that this weekend. Yeah. But yes, why you wanted them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's really good. Okay, so last thing you talked about. You defined a safe place as the place where you can be yourself without the concern of a loss of connection or intimacy.
Yeah.
Which is a great definition. So tell me, for you, what unpack that a little bit more. What does that feel like to you? You know, you're an artist, so paint a picture for me, right?
Yeah.
Describe the movie script to me here. What does that feel like? And then if somebody either wants to create that or wants to be in that, give us some practical things.
Yeah.
What are the kind of the pillars that hold up a safe environment?
Well, you know, I said this weekend to the young adults, we talked a lot about breakthrough, at least, you know, the worship leaders, you know, kind of put that out there. And I said, hey, breakthrough is always around the corner.
Right.
But it will often be on the other side of honesty.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to be honest.
Right.
Otherwise, what impact will God have on a person that's being dishonest about their situation?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The woman at the well needed to be honest about her life.
And a lot of times, I just hold that.
No, please.
A lot of times, this is the reason that it's also on the other side of suffering. Because
that's
suffering
right.
produces honesty.
And honesty, to some degree, is to suffer.
Exactly.
To be honest. For me to share with you all of the things that I need to be honest about, gosh, that's like an internal struggle.
It is. There's an intersectionality between the two, for sure.
100%.
Yeah, so God leads us into valleys to strip us of our masks, right?
Yeah.
To bring us to a space.
No, 100%.
Yeah.
And so I think that breakthrough is going to be on the other side of honesty. And as you mentioned very well, like it is also on the other side of suffering.
Yeah.
And so it's like birth.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, neither of us have given birth, but we've seen our wives.
Thank you.
We have not. But we've seen our wives. We've seen
the most amazing strength, you know, human feet of strength.
And Jesus talks about this. He says, yo, this is like labor pains,
but
nothing compares to the joy of holding that child on the other side. So anyways, you know, I think that, you know, it's difficult to imagine that you can experience newness of life without the pain of that suffering. And I think when you talk about safe places, like, man, I think I won't speak about Graceway because I don't know Graceway as deeply as you do, of course, but I think in Christian culture, we need to be better about creating safety. For me, that felt like, again, I'll use the example that I shared in the sermon about last summer, man. I really hit a wall. It was tough, you know. I was able to be myself. I was messy. I was fragile. I was fearful. And the people that were in my inner circle, my wife, of course, my brothers, my brother-in-law, my friends, they just, they were not fazed by my awkwardness. I didn't feel like things were in jeopardy. Like, gosh, I need to get it together, Rich. Otherwise, I'm going to make people uncomfortable and they're not going to want to be around me. I just didn't feel that with those people. I felt like I could be undone. And that feels like such a Christ-like space. To be in a space where you can be undone. I mean, I think about the woman weeping at the feet of Jesus. There was nothing put together about that woman. And Jesus...
No flinch from Jesus.
No flinch. Nothing. In fact, he highlighted her as the model.
While the rest of the room
While the rest were like, yo, what is happening? I think about that woman. I think about the woman that hemorrhaged for 12 years. You know, she was ostracized by society. Financially, she felt the impact of her ostracizing. And she said, man, I may be putting people at risk walking through this crowd. You know, like, she could put people at risk. You know, that's like COVID. Like, man, where's your mask? You know what I'm saying? Like, all that stuff, wherever you land on that stuff. But she said, I don't care. I need to get to Jesus. And you know what? Jesus was on his way to heal another girl, Jairus's daughter. He was actually busy, but he stopped. He stopped and he attended to her. And so I think that feels like a very Jesus space, to be unfazed. Practically, how does this look? Confession is a big part of this. Confession is a big part of creating hospitable spaces and safe spaces, because one of the things that I think we have to do is change the language. When someone comes and they confess something to you, you know those spaces, somebody says something and you're like, oh gosh, I didn't know he was going to be this honest. Like, this is awkward, dude. Or he starts crying and you're like, oh man, I'm not ready for this. I mean, I think the first thing we should do is normalize people being undone in our Christian spaces. Like, hey man, people are going to say some things that are going to like make you feel awkward, but press through it. Be okay with it. Normalize that. People been through some stuff. You've been through some stuff. If you were totally honest with some of the things that you're going through, people would probably feel the same way. Normalize people saying awkward things. Normalize people saying things that make you feel super uncomfortable. The second thing is the language we use. You know, I think we got to stop calling people that have gone through some things as the fallen. I think that creates a barrier. And it doesn't feel safe for the people confessing. We want people to confess their sin so that it would lead them to repentance, so that it would ultimately lead them to healing. That's not going to happen if they don't feel like they could actually share themselves with you. We've got to normalize people saying some really wacky things. And we've got to stop calling people fallen or ostracizing them because they've gone through something, you know, that your society would have deemed taboo, or that church culture would have deemed taboo. And then secondly, man, I think putting ourselves in the position of those that have also gone through some things. Like, yo, man, we're not that different. We're not that different. We've gone through some things. And practicing the discipline of confession and maybe perhaps switching the lens. Like, confession is not this deeply revered thing that only happens with a few people and in front of a few people. Like, confession is sacred, but it can happen among brothers and sisters. We need to normalize some of that stuff.
I think you tell me if you know, agree or disagree here. I think we always want a safe place. But very few of us want to be a safe place.
100%. I agree with that.
And really, spiritually, relationally, societally, like attracts like. So if you want to experience a safe place, then ask God to make you one. What you'll find out is that you'll reap the benefits of that space that God initiated in your heart. Because you said it today, the actuality of love always involves risk.
Always.
It's impossible to mitigate. And the same thing is true about the type of spaces that we all crave, the type of spaces that we all aspire to, is that I always want you to go first.
That's right.
And couple that with our culture being so individualistic, you know, you see it in race, you see it in economics, you see it in politics. 100%. You go first, or just agree with me, instead of, no, I'm going to figure out a way to exhibit empathy and kindness and grace.
That's such a lonely place, and it's such a terrifying place. Again, love is risky, because going first is hard.
But to put a bow on this, you know, you really started at identity, right? Your identity isn't what you produce. Your identity is in Jesus. That's the reason your identity is so important, because identity creates safety for me to be safety for you, because I already know who I am. So I don't need to wait on you. I already know who I am in Jesus. And really, the Christian community, I would love to see us this is the magic of that. If we could reclaim our identity in Jesus, we really could be less uptight about other people's brokenness, because we would know who we are. We would remember who we were before Jesus. And so when somebody walks into the church house not looking quiet or acting quiet or saying quiet right, yeah, man, there's no flinch. I know who I am. I know who God is. I know what God has for you. So you do you. You're safe here. And let God do his thing, and be patient in that, right? Anything you would add to, like, great sermon? But
no, man. I think you said it really well. The best way to create safe space is to ask God to make you a safe space with others. And I think that's genius and super practical. So, no, man, it was a pleasure being here with you, man.
Appreciate it, bro. Yeah. Hey, if you haven't heard the sermon, visit graceway.org. Follow Pastor Rich on all, I assume you're on
all social media platforms. Yeah.
Yeah. Blow him up. Thank him for being here. An incredible service to our community. We love you. See you next week.
Thanks for tuning into the Graceway Experience. Hope we can talk again sometime.